Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast.
Hey, guys, you know how much I love Tommy John's underwear, undershirts, and their socks. They are the best. Yet, you know what? We're getting a lot of feedback from Hannity listeners, too. And guess what? Tommy John sent me a few testimonials from real live Sean Hannity Show listeners, so I'm going to share them with you. Dave says, I can't believe I'm saying this, but they have actually changed my life. Mark says, great materials, great fit, a great example of how doing something very basic, very well, can make a surprisingly positive impact on the quality of life. And Gary says, my grumpy stepfather actually thanked me for the gift of Tommy John's. That's a first in the 40 years I've known him. Louise says, my husband is walking, bending, and lifting all day. This is the first pair of underwear that doesn't roll down and ride up. He loves them. Now, you've heard the reviews. What are you waiting for? You have nothing to lose with Tommy John. It's the best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free, guarantee. Just go to TommyJohn.com/Hannity. You get 20% off your first order. TommyJohn.com/Hannity. 20% off. Now look at this. Healthcare is not dead. All right, I'll get to that. Prince, there we go. Bingo. All right, I'm ready to roll. How are you? Happy Monday. Glad you're with us. Write down our toll-free telephone number. We'd love for you to be a part of this extravaganza. So what the Senate can't get done, the president's just going to get done on his own. And it's, I think it's going to work, and we've been way ahead of the curve here. It's everything that we had been talking to Senator Rand Paul about, and I'll give you the details of that coming up in a minute in the course of the show today. I don't care about Bob Corker and what he thinks of the president. I just don't care. All I know is that the Senate hasn't accomplished their, fulfilled their promises. They're not getting the job done. Now, say what you will about the House. They're not perfect either, but they passed 280 bills, some of them really good, a sanctuary city bill, Kate's Law, a bunch of things, and you can't even get the Senate to take it up because the Senate sucks so bad. And it's like, well, Bob Corker works for, he speaks for the majority of the people in the Senate, and they don't like Donald Trump. Oh, okay, so that gives you every justification and rationale you ever needed to stab the forgotten men and women that desperately need some changes in Washington, the help that they need. It is just pathetic. I'm going to tell you the real reason Corker's leaving, in my view. Corker was going to get primaried, and there was going to be a massive push to get him out of the Senate. He is the problem. People like him are the problem. And if they don't get the message, then we're just going to have this inaction. Does it suck that we first had to elect Republicans, give them the House in 2010? Yeah. With the hope that if we got the House and Senate, then they do something? Yeah. Then if we get the House, the Senate, and a Republican president that has a pen in hand and is ready to sign bills, well, now we have to replace some of those senators because they suck so bad and they have no sense of urgency and they're as bad as the establishment Democrats, and it's all part of a good old boy system and nothing gets done. And it's so frustrating. And Corker thinks that he's such a tough guy going up against the president on Twitter. I mean, one of the reasons I stopped fighting on Twitter, you got all these people, these keyboard warriors in their underwear that think they're so tough, and they're not. And it becomes repetitive. Listen, I can make people with one TikTok tweet, you know, bubble and fizz. And by the way, it's coming. Oh, it's coming. And it's big. And it's happening. And it's going to happen. TikTok, TikTok. Did you see my TikTok last night? It's got like 50,000 people viewing that. No, not 50. It's literally like a million plus people now. They want me to tell them. Everyone wants to know what the TikTok is. So I write T-7 and counting. And this is hilarious. You got CNN people writing me. Is it 7 minutes, 7 hours? Is it 7 days? Is it 7 months? And I'm like, I'm not giving you my story. I'm reading it laughing. You're so stupid. But there is something coming. I don't TikTok unless I have something to fulfill. So there's something coming. More on that. And just stay tuned to this program. We're doing our job, I promise you. And we're working hard every day. So you got this Harvey Weinstein story. And it's pretty disgusting and it's pretty ugly. And Kevin Sorbo, you know, I got a movie that I am the executive producer of. And don't ask me why and how. I do know how I got into it. I do exactly why I did it. And I'm sick of Hollywood. And Hollywood, to me, insults our intelligence. Now, I think there's a time and a place for Batman and Spider-Man and Superman and Catwoman and Captain America. And I like Indiana Jones movies, and I like Rocky movies, and I like some movies. I have found myself, I don't think I've been in a movie theater except last Christmas because I took my kids only, and they have comfortable seats, and they sell beer and food in the theater. That's the only thing that got me in to go with them. I'm being honest. I have no desire to see the average movie today because Hollywood is so liberal, so formulaic, and there's just no room, it seemingly, for any real creativity. So in about 10 minutes after a meeting, I was pitched a story. The name of the movie is Let There Be Light, and it stars Kevin Sorbo, Hercules fame, and his wife, Sam. And by the way, it opens October 27th. What's today's date? So it opens in whatever, how many days? 28 days. And, well, why don't you add properly instead of making me look like an idiot? Because I'm, you know, if you're going to tell me definitively, I'm not thinking about the days because you told me we're going to tell me.
I'm sorry.
All right. You're forgiven. So anyway, so he sent me something today and he goes, a 2015 survey, Kevin Sorbo writes me, of nearly 1,400 Oscar acceptance speeches by this website found that Weinstein was thanked more frequently than God. Here's one thing I can promise you. This movie's never getting an Oscar. This movie, I'm never going to the Oscars. I'm never going to a Washington Correspondents' Dinner. That's not why I made the movie. Because there are those of us that have values that are contradicted all the time. We're seeing it now happen in the NFL. The NFL, if they keep Jerry Jones is right, the owner of the Miami Dolphins is right, they keep going down this path, they're going to lose everybody. Because when Mike Pence walked out the other day, yesterday, from the Indianapolis 49ers game and said, I'm not going to watch our troops get treated this way. I'm not going to do it. You've got an ESPN guy, the same host that called President Trump a white supremacist. He's now saying he's going to boycott the NFL unless team owners permit the players to protest during the anthem. I'm like, okay, but the average person that goes to the stands, it's an average cost per ticket's about $100 in the NFL. You take a family of four, two kids, two adults. You buy two jerseys, now you're up to $600. Then you buy a couple of beers at like $50,000 a beer and a couple of hot dogs and a Coke and water is $10, whatever you buy. And you're leaving there $600, $700, $800 in the hole. And for the average family that makes $50 a year, that's a lot of money. And everybody in the stands likes to stand for the anthem. And most people in the stands respect the men that fought, bled, and died, and they understand that they did it under that flag. And that's how we honor that flag, this country, with that anthem of unity. And right now, there was one poll that came out, Winston poll, Washington-based Winston Group. They now found that football is no longer America's most popular sport. And Colin Kaepernick donating money to charity honoring a convicted cop killer. And then we have the cop killer socks of Colin Kaepernick. Anyway, so Mike Pence walked out and, you know, people are upset. I'm like, why'd they be upset? And I think that he was dead. Oh, it's a publicity. No, it's not a publicity stunt. The vice president said, I'm not going to dignify any event that disrespects our soldiers and our flag. And that's his choice. I don't support boycotts. I'm not going to tell any advertiser to pull out of the NFL. I'm not putting the advertisers of the NFL up on websites. That's what liberals do to conservatives because they don't like to have an alternative point of view. The NFL's free not to follow their own policies. You know, because they didn't allow people to put never again 9/11/01 on the 15th anniversary of 9/11. So that's not allowed. You weren't allowed to honor the cops in Dallas. They wanted to put an emblem of the police officers that were slain in the line of duty in Dallas after they were killed last year. That wasn't allowed either. You can't shoot a fake bow and arrow in the end zone, for crying out loud. Certain things you can't twerk in the NFL. You can't use abusive language. You can't tell the ref to go blank himself or other players to do the same. So there are rules on freedom of speech all over the place. They want to continue down this road. It's going to result in people saying they've had enough with the NFL. And I can tell you, we're now done with week five, and I don't give a flying rip about the NFL right now. Not even a little bit. Honestly, I'm more interested in baseball at this time. And baseball's boring to watch. I much prefer hockey. At least it's fast-paced. I mean, as the windup, there's the pitch outside wide. All right, dust off his cap, little rosin on his hand. Gets up to the plate. Player calls time. Okay, back to the plate. Here's the windup. Here's the pitch. Strike one. You know, I mean, it's rough. It's really rough. But I do like it because I used to play, but it's crazy. Anyway, so it's the same thing in Hollywood. Now, so many of us, we actually have values. We believe in our families, God, faith, family, and country. It doesn't mean any of us are perfect. It means we have a desire to be better people. That's why people go to church, not because you are perfect, because you want to be forgiven and become better. That's why, you know, the media, you know, I was watching, you know, in the Harvey Weinstein case, do you not know that Saturday Night Live, Lorne Michaels actually said, well, it's more of a New York story. And I'm like, yeah, okay, so is Donald Trump. He's from Queens, New York, a New York builder. And they've gone after him with a vengeance. But then Stephen Colbert, Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy Fallon, Seth Meyers, they don't even talk about it. Let's see, he's donated tens of thousands to Hillary PAC, the Obama Victory Fund, the Democratic National Committee, the Democratic Senatorial Committee, Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, Cory Booker, Chuck Schumer, Andrew Cuomo, Elizabeth Warren, Kirsten Gillibrand, Al Franken, John Kerry, Pat Leahy, Ted Kennedy when he was around, Robert Torricelli, Bob Kerry. I mean, every big name Democrat, Richard Blumenthal, Harry Reid, Howard Dean, he's been doing it for years. Years. And then everybody's known he's been horrible. And here's the thing. You know, when I listen to these Hollywood liberals, they hate the president we voted and the change he wants. They have contempt for middle America. I can't stand another self-congratulatory, you know, red carpet event. I'm going to pull my hair out, you know, attacking, you know, people in the middle of the country. So I made a movie that I think would resonate, and it does have faith in it. It does have family in it. It's contemporary. It starts out with a Christian debating a guy that wrote a book, Aborting God, and it has, I think, what would be a real-life scenario, and then it has an ebb and flow into this guy's life. It's unpredictable. You're never going to finish the outcome. And I have shown it to many focus groups on my own, and almost everybody cries. And I'm really proud of it. And that's why I did the movie, because I like the message, and I know Hollywood would never make this movie. Now, by the way, it's out October 27th. We'll be promoting it in the weeks ahead. And it's called Let There Be Light. We have a list of theaters we're now building, and it's on my website, Hannity.com. And I think that I'm sick of Hollywood. I'd like to see a new Hollywood. Fox News became a new media. You know, talk radio became a new media. And so I like it because the message. That's why I did it. And I think it's a message. Wow, you can actually take your kids and mom and dad and your grandparents all to one movie. And you're going to be riveted if it's action-packed. And it doesn't hit you over the head with religion. It's there. And it's not impugned in one sense. It's uplifting. And I think you're going to leave there thinking, okay, that I got a really solid message out of that, and I was entertaining the process. And that was the goal. Anyway, October 27th, it's up on my website. Let There Be Light, the great music accompaniment, and I'll talk more about it in the days ahead. So what does it mean that you don't get the usual suspects attacking Harvey Weinstein? And the things I'm reading are just atrocious. And I actually know one of the people involved. And it's so bad. There's somebody that, you know, Rebecca, a woman who writes in New York Magazine today. In my mid-20s, I was a reporter at The Observer. Part of my beat was covering film. Anyway, she was called the C-word by Harvey Weinstein. and this and that, and, you know, just dressing this poor girl down in the most inappropriate way. And then one of her colleagues intervened. He got thrown down the stairs. There's a million photographers. Nobody did anything. Saturday Night Live does nothing on it, nor does any of the late nights, Colbert, Kimmel, Fallon, Myers. They just ignore it. Now, do I really care about Harvey Weinstein? You know, I care about the women. But, you know, liberals would have you think that they have a monopoly of compassion on women. But I talked a lot about this during the campaign. How is it if Hillary really cared, does she take millions from countries that abuse them? Like Saudi Arabia and Kuwait, and marital rape isn't even a crime in some of these countries. And women are told how to dress. They can't drive cars. They can't vote in some of these countries under Sharia. And women can't travel abroad without permission, or go to school or work without permission, or leave the house without permission of their husbands. Can't be seen without a male relative in public. They're told how to dress head to toe. I mean, it's just insane abuse of women. And then insane abuse of gays and lesbians. And insane abuse of Christians and Jews. You know, if there's a preacher, a man of faith, or the cloth that falls from grace, it's everywhere. The liberal media loves that. Not that everybody that goes to a church is perfect. They're not. They want to be better. Okay, so they get punished and beaten up because they want to be better people. You know, if you're a conservative or a Republican and there's a sex scandal, forget it. It's everywhere. 24/7, 365. Unbelievable. And all this money, what are the liberals, the left, what are they going to do with Harvey Weinstein money? What are they going to do with it? They're going to return it? Anybody going to cover it? It's going to get interesting. I doubt it. There's such hypocrisy. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We got all the other news of the day. And we'll be talking about Corker versus Trump next. Sean Hannity Show. All right, 25 till the top of the hour. Toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program, 800-941-SEAN. You know, I love how the DNC. All right, so if all of a sudden they're against what Harvey Weinstein stands for, you would think they'd give all the money back. No. They're taking heat, the DNC, from, you know, and for accepting this money, you know, from Harvey Weinstein. So what they did, they got $300,000 from this guy. And now they're just going to give it to other causes that will support them. You know, there's a real stand-in principle here. We can't give the money back. See, it took us too long to get the money, and we're not giving it back. And, you know, he had a wide net of people that he gave money to. And he hung out with all these. And this was widely known. You only have to watch this guy for like 5 minutes, and you figure out he's off his rocker. And it wasn't that hard to figure out. You know, I'm watching this tweet battle go on between Bob Corker and the president. And the president was out there this weekend, and he also praised, by the way, praised Mike Pence for doing what he did. I thought Mike Pence did the right thing, and that's kind of how I feel. And my attitude is, as long as the NFL is not going to honor the anthem and these guys want to take a knee and it's their right, my personal decision, and I'm not trying to influence anybody in their decision, is I'm just not interested. You know, week five is now come and gone. And let's see, the Cowboys are 1-4. The Giants are 0-5. Who would have thunk it? The Jets are 3-2, tied with the Patriots at 3-2. It makes it a little bit of an interesting year. I think there's two teams that are 4-1, the Packers and I forget who else. I know it's not San Francisco. I think they're 0-5 too. But I just don't care. And what's happening is the more political they become, the more they just stick to this, the more that it's making me say, forget it. Now, Jerry Jones is saying players, he's going to bench these players if they continue what they're doing. And I think he's doing the right thing. It happens to be part of the rules of the NFL. And my question is, well, where's Roger Goodell? Why isn't Roger Goodell? He wouldn't let you wear, you know, 9/11/01, never forget, put it on your cleats. Who's going to see your cleats? It was the thought that counts. Can't honor policemen that are slaughtered. What's so bad? And all right, so this, let them keep going here, and they're going to see what's going to happen. And it's going to end up not working out very well for the NFL. Has it happened in college at all that you've seen, Jason? I have. What?
I haven't noticed it, but I think very quietly it's starting to foment in the college game.
Yeah, so it's beginning to show up a little bit in college.
Yeah, I think an NHL player, I heard.
Yeah, there was one that held his stick up. I don't think it's going to go much further, because at the end of the day, people are going to be entertained, and they're spending really big money to be entertained. And I think Jerry Jones is smart enough, we're going to respect the flag on his team. And then you got the owner of one of the least liked sports. Core fans are down 31%, and we're seeing it. They're seeing it in revenue, and they're seeing it in ratings. That must mean the American people are racist. No, the American people honor the flag. It's very simple. They honor the flag, they honor their anthem, they honor their country, and they honor the sacrifice of the military that gives us the freedom to drink beer, eat hot dogs, pizza, have a great time, nibble on popcorn, and then go home after paying $800 for a family of four. That's basically it. It's not any more complicated than that. Pretty simple. So the president's been out there with that. Anyway, he praised Vice President Pence for doing this. Now, also, he rightly has gone after Bob Corker. Bob Corker now is firing back. Bob Corker thinks he's tough. There is now, after Roy Moore, and Steve Bannon is on Hannity tonight at 9. There are going to be challenges to the do-nothing Senate and the do-nothing House members. Those that don't keep their promises are going to be primaried. And I'm telling you because I'm talking to grassroots people around the country. And they see what happened in Alabama. You can remember what happened. Laura Ingraham will join us in studio at the top of the next hour. You remember what happened to when Dave Brat won his seat in Virginia and he was up against leadership, Eric Cantor. And it's going to happen in other places as well. And Bob Corker is not understanding. The House handed the Senate 280 bills. Bob Corker is not screaming for his colleagues to get their agenda completed. To get their promises completed. He did give us this ridiculous Iranian deal, which was insane, but he didn't give us health care. And he's now, what is he going to be, petulant and fight back because the president dares to call him out and say that, all right, and Trump said, Bob Corker gave us the Iranian deal. That's about it. We need health care. We need tax cuts. We need people that can get the job done. And he goes on to say, I would fully expect Corker to be a negative voice and stand in the way of our great agenda. He didn't have the guts to run. Corker would have lost a primary, in my view, in Tennessee. Corker's not particularly popular. Now, the president also made a number of agenda moves today. Remember, we were having the big DACA debate after he met with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, and the president decided to play hardball with Democrats on the immigration issue, which was what my hope was at the time. And the deal is very simple, and Democrats will be told to either take it or leave it, fund the border wall, or say goodbye to the Dreamers. And that's what negotiation's about. Now, do they care more about the Dreamers, or do they care more about stopping the wall? Because that's the bottom line choice for the Democrats. If they care a lot about the Dreamers, they'll be willing to fund the wall. Anyway, so the president sent Congress a list of sweeping immigration changes on Saturday, and he says that must be included as part of any legislation that addresses the status of deferred action for children, DACA. Anyway, Trump wants the border wall that he campaigned for to be built. He wants a crackdown on illegal immigration, and he wants to switch the U.S. legal immigration system from one that prioritizes family connections to one based on merit, all of which I would support. And Trump has promoted these policies before, both during the campaign and as president. And now he's demanding that they be included in any legislative fix for DACA. Now, they're going to say he doesn't care about the children. And maybe they think that they're going to play hardball with the president. Well, here's the choice of the Democrats. Do they care more about not building the wall over the DACA kids? So they've got to give themselves in that sense. Anyway, the president wants to fund and complete construction of the southern border wall where we're going to build it to ensure the safe and expeditious return of unaccompanied alien children and family units. and the abuse of the asylum system by tightening standards, imposing penalties for fraud, ensuring detention while claims are verified, remove illegal border crossers quickly by hiring an additional 370 immigration judges and 1,000 ICE attorneys, stop all sanctuary cities, strengthen a law by hiring 10,000 more ICE officers and 300 federal prosecutors, and visa overstay by establishing reforms to ensure their swift removal, protect U.S. workers by requiring e-verify and strengthening laws to stop employment discrimination against U.S. workers, and extended family chain migration by limiting family-based green cards to include spouses and minor children, and establish a points-based system for green cards to protect U.S. workers and taxpayers. In other words, you're going to take in people that actually, you know, can come here, take care of themselves, whose jobs and services are in demand that are going to help the country. And that's what the president is shooting. By the way, the president did take on television and said that Republicans deserve equal time on television news shows. You know, there was a study that came out. This president has had 90% negative coverage, more than any other president in history. And it doesn't get worse than that. Now, I want people like Bob Corker to pay very close attention. Everything the president could do, for example, on his own, getting rid of Obama-era regulations, et cetera, he's been able to do. He's not been able to get Congress to get off their ass and fix health care. But the president is about to sign an executive order this week. He's worked with Rand Paul. Rand Paul has been on this program numerous times talking about this. He was on when they were debating the last health care version before the September 30th deadline. He was on talking about it. And I knew the president was considering this. So what it is, it will expand association health plans as a means by which to circumvent Obamacare regulations. Now, you got to stay with me here because this is important. This is actually deep and pretty profound, and it's a very significant step in the right direction as it relates to healthcare. Because if we really do nothing, it's collapsing. If we do nothing, there are going to be people that can't get insurance. They're not going to be able to afford it anymore. $8,000 increase over the Obama years is enough, and there are projected increases in some states over 100% more this coming year, 2018. So anyway, the bottom line of this, you know, Obamacare regulations have driven costs through the roof, and that has forced insurance carriers to drop their participation in the program. That's why all these counties only have one option that people can decide from, take it or leave it. It's not like you have other choices. So what Rand Paul described on this program, it's related to a 1974 law. And it really fits in with the model that we have been discussing with Dr. Josh Umber. And larger consumers inevitably can get better deals. And the idea is you buy in bulk. And the idea is you can find a cooperative. And the idea is that the Paul plan would use the Employment Retirement Income Security Act, ERISA for short, to evade Obamacare regulatory requirements, and it would be legal. Now, if the president does this, it would literally bury Obamacare with greater choice, more competition in the health insurance markets, and the Trump administration can get this done. Now, this bill, the Employee Retirement Income Security Act, was first passed in 1974. It enabled large corporations or entities to establish a single health plan or a set of health plans for all employees, rather than having to comply with the rules and regulations of every state in which they operate. In other words, if you have factories in 20 states, you can't go by 20 states' rules. You can just create one big cooperative, and it allows corporations to do that, which is a pretty smart thing to do. And it minimizes the, you know, the impact that these corporations that want to give insurance to their employees and all the hoops and loops that they have to jump through to actually get it done. Anyway, to this pre-exemption of state law, Congress added exemptions to many Obamacare regulations. In other words, these plans thus benefit from the absence of these onerous state and federal mandates. What that would then do is we can now expand health cooperatives for any large group of people. and the health care provisions that were first passed in 74, you know, in states like New York or California, Illinois, every conceivable interest group, you know, what that is even somewhat tangentially, you know, involved in health care, lobbied their state legislators to require their inclusion. So, example, if you're not interested in chiropractic included or mental health included or prenatal care, you're not going to have kids. Too bad, you're always stuck paying for it. And if you're young and healthy and you wanted what is illegal under Obamacare, catastrophic coverage. We've talked a lot about catastrophic coverage. That's if you have a heart attack, a bad accident, or get cancer. So if you can create a cooperative like Dr. Umber's, it's $50 a month. You got a 95% reduction in prescriptions. You're paying next to nothing for x-rays, and all of your care is handled, and you have access to your doctor 24/7, 365. Then you couple that with catastrophic insurance. Bingo, you got a great coverage, great plan for literally, you know, a third of the price of what you're paying now. And you have free market competition that also kicks in. You know, the biggest mandate of Obamacare, the guaranteed issue where one can forego insurance until getting sick and the insurance company then must accept you. You know, all of this death spiral is going to end. And young people who were forced to buy plans they never needed or wanted, so they would fund sort of transfer of wealth from that young people would pay for the sick and the elderly and the uninsured. That's all going to come to an end if the president would just do this. May end up working out better because you can't count on people like Bob Corker to get any of these things done because they seem incapable of it. All right, we got to take a break. We're going to come back. 800-941-SHAWN. Laura Ingraham is coming up. Joe Conch is coming up today. We have an update on Debbie Wasserman Schultz. We'll get to that. We've got an awesome Hannity tonight. Steve Bannon is going to talk about Republican incumbents being defeated. Steve Scalise is going to join us, his first cable interview after the shooting that he suffered. He nearly died, for crying out loud. He had like 60 blood transfusions. Thank God he's back. Laura Ingraham tonight, she's going to join us. And we'll have a debate, Burgess Owen, Spencer Tillman on the NFL. You don't want to miss it. That's 9 Eastern tonight, our new time. Hannity on Fox News. We hope you'll set your DVR. We'll continue.
I want to focus on North Korea. I want to focus on Iran. I want to focus on other things. I don't want to focus on fixing somebody's back or their knee or something. Let the states do that. The states should do that. So the block grant concept is a very good concept. And if you have good management, good governors, good politicians in the state, it'll be phenomenal. If you don't, it's like everything else. So we are, I could almost say we are just about there in terms of the vote. So I expect to be getting health care approved. But I'm disappointed. I thought that when I ran, you know, I've been hearing like you for 7 years, repeal and replace, repeal. For 7 years, I was a civilian. I wasn't even thinking about doing this. I was doing my nice buildings all over, and I was leading a very nice life, believe me. And then I decided to do and so for 2 years, I've been saying we're going to repeal and replace. That's what's going to happen. We will repeal and replace. But I thought that when I got to the Oval Office, I would have a bill sitting on my desk, repeal and replace a beautiful health care bill, and it didn't happen. But remember, it didn't happen because of a lot of Republicans. It didn't have it. You know, that happened. That horrible thing happened because of a few people, really a few people. And the problem we have is we have 52 senators. And they have to get rid of the just absolutely crazy voting where you need 60. It's called the filibuster rule. It's a disaster. Okay? It's a disaster for the Republicans. They have to get rid of it. If they don't get rid of it, it's just a death sentence. And we should go back to a majority, and we'll get the votes one after another.
Quick final question. In the tax package, is it possible, rather than wrap it all into one great big bill that gives everyone an excuse to not vote for it, saying, right, oh, I'm for 99 of the 100 things.
Right.
Will it possibly be done a la carte, where each piece of it, and force these guys to say yes or no to each element of the tax plan?
We could do that. For instance, it would be easier, believe it or not, you know, the Democrats want to raise taxes because they want programs that many people don't want. They want a big increase in taxes, and we want a big cut in taxes. So for business, we could do it much easier if it was separate. But I don't like that because I think it looks unfair to people in the country. You know, the business, now, even though it's going to create jobs, they're not looking at it that way. So I want to do it this way. Could we do it that way? Absolutely. Some people prefer doing it that way. I think you would agree, if we can get it, doing it the way we're doing it is better, because I want to give the middle income people in this country. And this is not a tax for the rich. Now, everybody's going to benefit, but this is what we're focused on more than anything. And even more so, we're actually adding things in as we speak, because, you know, the plan's being adjusted, et cetera. But this is for the middle class. So the answer is yes, it would be easier if I cut it down into the middle income people, or the working people, as I call them, because they are, they're working people. If I do that, and business would be easier, but I'd like to do it as one.
All right, so maybe we'll actually get some progress. Hour two, Sean Hannity Show, toll-free, our telephone number is 800-941-SEAN. You want to be a part of the program, so it is a rare in-studio appearance. My Fox News colleague of 10 years now will debut the Ingram angle immediately following Hannity on Fox, debuting October the 30th, because she needed a few weeks to get her act together.
Oh, you know something? I am the abuse I take, James.
She needed a few weeks to go on vacation.
You know something? You have such a fancy studio. I have a very down-home studio. Like, you got like 15 screens. What is this, NORAD? Look at this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You got 15 in the other room.
Three over there.
You got the ode to Hannity all over the place. This is amazing.
What is the... Yeah, Conservative Solutions Caucus. Wait a minute.
You have your head on George Washington's body.
No, it's
superimposed.
Not me.
What is that?
Why are you lying?
You were at Valley Forge. That's a good move.
Why are you lying? Anyway,
I love that.
So that's the forgotten man sitting on the bench.
Okay. Yeah,
and there's
like
Donald Trump
person helping
the forgotten man. Okay. And I try and remember what this election was about, because for a big part of my life, I was the forgotten man. Had $200
came,
in my bank
you and
account.
I came from the forgotten man and woman. Yeah. That's where we came from. That's why we're hungry.
You know, I'm glad you wrote this book. It's called Billionaire at the Barricades, The Populist Revolution from Reagan to Trump. Who was it that wrote this? Oh, they're like, we go from William F. Buckley to the likes of Hannity and Ingram and talk radio. Is that what this is? Is this the movement? I'm thinking, I happen to revere Buckley. I mean, he's a brilliant, brilliant man.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
And God and man. You know, but... You know, are they going to talk about his irreverence? I remember a few debates with Gore Vidal, if he ever said the things he said then.
That was the Buckley we really liked, taking on Vidal.
Yeah,
yeah, well, the party has been in this family feud mode since about 2007, when they tried to push the Bush amnesty down everyone's throats. They tried to put Harriet Myers, the ultimate act of cronyism, on the Supreme Court. And that was talk radio that basically stopped both things. The immigration amnesty that was being pushed back then by John McCain and a lot of Democrats, and George W. Bush, and the Myers nomination. Thank goodness we defeated both, because now we have Sam Alito on the Supreme Court, and we have Donald Trump. So I think the Reagan revolution brought everyone together, because Reagan came in, Sean, at a time when we had to defeat the Soviet Union, when Jimmy Carter had taken our country down a ravine. We had the Iranian hostage crisis. And Reagan came along after almost winning the nomination in 76. And with a conservative populist zeal, he revolutionized politics in the country. You and I wouldn't be doing what we're doing without Reagan.
So no doubt about it.
He is the reason we have a meeting. Without Reagan, there would have been no Fox News.
Right, so
there would have been no Limbaugh.
Here's my question, though. I look at Trump's agenda, and I don't care if it's his economic plan, 7 brackets of 3, repatriation, energy independence, corporate taxes, lowering the rates across the board for the most part. We can get to the details later. Immigration, secure the borders, be identifying evil in our time, something Obama wouldn't do. What part of his agenda is not conservative? Because, I mean, we throw around these terms, populist, nationalist.
Yep.
But I look at Trump's agenda as conservative. I've always been a Reagan conservative. I've not changed.
Yeah. Well, Reagan used the Make America Great Again. That was one of his first commercials, as everyone remembers. And his point from 76 on, really from 64 on, was without a strong, vibrant American economy, we're no good to the rest of the world. Because if America sees that the system at home is rigged against them and is not really working for the everyman, it's just working for a very small veneer of elites, then they're not going to have any desire to do anything in any other countries, any foreign countries. So Reagan understood that. He when he went to blue collar America and said, you don't have to vote Democrat anymore, there's a new way forward. Trump actually did a similar thing. There are different people. Obviously, Trump's not a politician. He doesn't speak with the same, you know, poetic.
They hate that.
You know, with the same poetry of Reagan. But remember, the same Democrats who despise Reagan and the same old style Republican Party that hated Reagan in 76 called him a force of disruption.
No, they called him. Republicans were the one that called him an amiable dunce.
Yeah. And he was a Ronnie Reagan. He was going to blow us all up. He was going to get us into World War III. What are they saying about Trump? Corker yesterday was going to get us into World War III. It's exactly what they said about Reagan, because Reagan didn't want to do the detente anymore. He wanted peace through strength.
Right.
He thought we could bring the Soviet Union down by a stronger U.S. economy and a bigger military. And he was laughed at for that.
You know what's amazing? I watched this Corker thing go back and forth, and I don't think Corker doesn't get it.
No.
The Senate doesn't get it. Do you realize they've been there? They're now in their 10th month since Trump has been president. What have they accomplished? They've maybe approved a third of the president's
VA thing.
VA thing was a big deal. And no doubt Gorsuch on the Supreme Court, give credit where credit is due.
Yep.
If it wasn't for the president stepping out today with Rand Paul and using his statutory authority on the issues involving health care, we wouldn't get anything done.
Yep.
Everything the president could do himself, he's done.
Exactly. And yet we heard yesterday and today on some of the other cable channels, we heard, well, the president just doesn't want to pass legislation. The president just wants to bully people and to appeal to his 30% talk radio audience. And I said to that, how many pieces of legislation have arrived at his door on his desk that he hasn't signed? He even signed the Russian sanctions bill, which frankly was a stupid bill. He signed it reluctantly, but he wanted to play along and play nice with the establishment there. And he did that. But I'm telling you, the establishment Republicans, the McConnells, the Corkers, the McCains, the Lindsey Grahams of the world, we can work with them on certain issues, but on some issues, there's just a break in the family, and that's not coming back. That's not coming back.
So they're not Reagan conservatives. So in other words,
I would argue no. They're globalists.
The one that is the bigger Reagan conservative would be Trump.
I think Donald Trump, and it's so odd to think about it, but a guy who comes from Manhattan, who grew up as a son of privilege, has a closer connection to the heartbeat of the American working class than any of these Republicans on Capitol Hill. And I mean any of them, which is stunning. That's a stunning thing.
If his plan was implemented, those people in those pictures, and I'm not in them, thank you very much, but John McNaughton is a great
painter. Declaration.
No, I actually have the original.
Oh.
That's a copy. I bought the original. That guy sitting on the bench, and you've got one side liberals, the other side conservative presidents, and Obama stomping on the Constitution. But if we would implement those economic plans, Reagan created 20 million new jobs, doubled revenues to the government. It was, up to that time, the longest period of peacetime economic growth in history. It can be duplicated.
It can be.
But why would they resist it?
Well,
why?
Because if Trump is successful, think of what that does to their brand of Republicanism, which has been really riding on the coattails of Reagan without a lot of accomplishments. They are at their heart, at their very heart, they're not working class conservatives. They're not. Most of them aren't from the people that we're from. I'm sorry, they're not. They're from a different
privilege,
which is okay because you can be privileged and actually get it. But they are, when push comes to shove, keeping wages low for corporate America by streaming people into the country. And they're for these global trade deals that have deindustrialized the Middle West. That's why all these states turned out for Trump. They've seen their livelihood destroyed, their families oftentimes broken up. They got all these people addicted to opioids. We had a hopelessness in America, Sean, that was so it was so transparent. And I felt it the night of November 6th in Leesburg, Virginia, 2 days before the election. It was a Sunday night and it was cold. It was maybe, 45 degrees. At midnight, there were 12,000 people waiting for Donald Trump to make his final trip
on the
campaign. I was there.
All right, stay right there. I want to know, you were sort of in the forefront of leading the effort against Eric Cantor, and you were successful, and Dave Brat took his place.
Yep.
And then we saw Roy Moore in Alabama, and just this weekend, Steve Bannon says, oh, this is just
starting.
We're just starting.
Going.
All right, we'll take a break. Laura Ingraham is with us, her brand new book out. We put it up on Hannity.com. It's called Billionaire at the Barricades, The Populist Revolution from Reagan to Trump.
By the way, I'm going to be in Philadelphia area on Thursday night, and then all the tour stops are on LauraIngraham.com. But Philly, I want to see a big Philly turnout on Thursday night.
And as we continue, Laura Ingraham is in studio with us today. 800-941-SHAWN is our number. We've got an investigation coming up into the very latest in the Debbie Wasserman Schultz scandal. So you wrote Billionaire at the Barricades. We saw what happened to Roy Moore in Alabama. You were in the forefront of going up against Eric Cantor. And as a result, I think we got a far better congressman in David Brat. And Steve Bannon is basically saying this is just the beginning, because if the Senate's not going to do their job and they're not going to get things accomplished and they're going to stop the agenda, then let's replace them. I agree with him.
I think he's totally right. And I'm going to be with Bannon with Kelly Ward in Phoenix next week.
So I'm supporting Kelly Ward.
Yeah, so we're doing a huge event for her. So it's Bannon and I and some other friends, I guess.
By the way, she's going to beat Jeff Flake.
Oh, Jeff Flake is one of the most unpopular, untethered to reality senators. He's a globalist, open borders, complete open markets. Doesn't matter if China's getting stronger. And he is a constant thorn in the side of this administration. He did not understand what the election was all about. And the people have had enough. I mean, just like on your show, Sean, my listeners in Phoenix go crazy. They're like, how did we get this guy? They always campaign as one thing, and then they govern as something totally different. Same with McCain.
By the way, I think Corker would have lost in Tennessee.
Absolutely. That's why he was getting out.
Corker was on his way out.
He, you know, barely won by the skin of his teeth last time around. He was scared last time around, and he managed to win. But this time, forget about it. The populist winds are blowing.
Who do you
through.
Like so far early in Tennessee?
Well, Marsha Blackburn's running. I like Marsha, but I want to see what the real field is, because I'm not sure she's nationalist enough for me, frankly. I mean, she's been there for a while. I like her a lot, but we'll see. I'm waiting to
see.
She's
actually come up with her own version of the penny plan that actually goes further than the version I've advocated all these years. Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm happy to look
at it. I'm not making decisions until the time.
No. We have plenty of time on that.
And I guess they're even going after Orrin Hatch now in Utah.
Well, again, Orrin Hatch, God bless him. He's a nice man. He could not be a nicer person.
No.
Lamar Alexander, Thad Corcoran. I mean, these people are like, they should be on the set of Cocoon. I mean, we've got to go. I mean, this is
Is that pool real? I want to find that pool.
The
pool with the pods.
Oh, yeah. My God. It's time to say goodbye. They're in their late 70s. Do they have no interests other than shuffling over to the Capitol every now and then to go to these black tie dinners, raising money? I mean, 77 years old, 79 years old, 82 years old. I mean, they've just got to, it's not. Not a lifetime job security act running for the Senate. I'm tired of all of them.
All right. So I'm looking at your book. I've been reading it this weekend.
Thank you.
Thanks for getting me an early copy. It's just out today in bookstores everywhere. It's on Hannity.com. Also, you're going to be doing a bunch of book events, speeches, I guess, along with the book signings in Philly and Myrtle Beach and D.C. You're headed to Oklahoma City, Scottsdale, Arizona, West. You had to put West Palm Beach.
Yeah, well, I had to get down there for sure.
I have to hang out at the Breakers.
I had to go check out your property down there.
I don't have any property down in West Palm
Beach.
You're
the landed gentry. You went from the construction site.
Oh,
to being the landed gentry.
I don't have property in West Palm Beach.
Oh, okay, sorry. It's the one county in Palm Beach County where you don't have property.
No, I'm on the other coast.
You actually own the panhandle. Are you kidding me?
I don't have any property in the panhandle.
Okay. Just
keep guessing.
Naples. Okay.
That's I do have a condo in Naples. All right, 800-941-SHAWN. We'll see you on Hannity tonight. It's up on Hannity.com. Quick break. We'll come back. Luke Rosiak will advance our investigation into Debbie Wasserman Schultz. We also have Steve Bannon and Laura Ingraham on tonight. And Steve Scalise in his first cable interview tonight, 9 Eastern, Hannity on Fox.
Under my understanding, the Capitol Police is not able to confiscate members' equipment when the member is not under investigation. It is their equipment, and it's supposed to be returned.
Well, I think there's extenuating circumstances in this case.
I think you're violating the rules when you conduct your business that way, and should expect that there would be consequences.
Not only I believe that I did the right thing, and I would do it again, because as I said at the beginning of this conversation, there are times when you can't be afraid to stand alone, and you have to stand up for what's right. And you know, even in the face, there are times you have to spend political capital to do what's right. Like I said, the easier thing to do for me would have been to just fire him. Obviously, I was the person who's had the most political challenges in the last year, so it would have been much easier for me to just cut him loose and say, you know, I'm going to look out for my best interests rather than stand up for what I believe in. But I have to be able to look at myself in the mirror every day. And if there's one thing I'm going to make sure that I maintain is my integrity.
Well, he's not my staffer. He no longer works for me, and when he was arrested, I terminated him. I kept him on the payroll during the time that he was not arrested and not charged with anything, and that was because, as I said, that I was concerned about the violation of his due process rights and also that there were racial and ethnic profiling concerns as well. I have maintained that it was important and will continue to maintain that when someone's due process rights are potentially being violated, that I'm going to stand up and make sure that that people's rights are protected in this country. That's the oath that I swore to uphold when I swore to uphold the Constitution.
All right, we have some updates now for you. That was Debbie Wasserman Schultz as it relates to this IT aide, Imran Awan. One is the lawyer for this individual, Awan, literally is now saying the Democratic congressmen are to blame for the falsified spending records. Remember, numerous Democratic congressmen ended up letting this guy go because he had double billed. Also, there were questionable people that were on the IT payroll. One guy that worked at McDonald's and was fired, another guy that worked at a car dealership. And so I would assume if you had IT qualifications and you're being paid more than the average chief of staff or about the same as a chief of staff, which is like the highest pay level in Washington, D.C., why would you be working at McDonald's? It didn't make any sense. Anyway, House Democrats ordered the systematic falsification of records showing how they spend their taxpayer-provided office budgets, according to lawyers for two former House information technology aides. And it is an accusation that now pits sitting lawmakers against the former aides Imran Awan, his brothers, and his wife. Now, he was arrested back in July while trying to board that flight to Pakistan after he'd sent money out in advance and then indicted on four counts of bank fraud involving moving money to that country. And he and his wife, also indicted, face a court date on Friday. That's just one of the updates. And Awan very strongly wants to block a review of the hard drives. Remember the hard drives that were found busted up in his garage? I know it sounds a lot like Hillary Clinton. Democrats like to bust up hard drives or acid wash them and bleach pit them. Anyway, the lawyers for Awan, who did work for Debbie Wasserman Schultz, feel strongly that the data recovered from the hard drive on Capitol Hill, this is the one that he left in the phone booth, that they shouldn't be able to get a hold of the information in there because he's left a note that said attorney-client privilege. But I thought he called the police to come pick it up. Anyway, that was before leaving it near that phone booth, according to things that they said in court on Friday. A police report shows that the backpack contained a laptop with the username RepDWS. And a copy of Imran Awan's ID in the notebook. And prosecutors revealed that when they arrested him at the airport in July as he tried to board the flight to Pakistan, he was carrying a resume with an alias in Jackson Heights, Queens, in New York City. And Imran may have planned to relocate there, seemingly under a different identity, according to prosecutor suggestions. And there's one other update, all these, by the way, from the Daily Caller, that he also was sending money and gifts to government officials in Pakistan and in return received protection from Pakistani police. Well, that raises questions about what sensitive information he may have had access to or top secret information he may have had access to. Luke Rosiak is with the Daily Caller with the very latest on this. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Did I describe these three developments accurately, and can you give us more detail?
Yeah, that's exactly right. A lot going on here. I mean, these guys made unauthorized access to House computers 5,000 times in a seven-month period and were funneling what the Washington Post called massive amounts of data off of it. Meanwhile, they've got these connections to foreign governments, like you described. Their lawyer acknowledged that they're sending money to this guy named Azar Awan, who's a member of the police department over in Pakistan. They're traveling with this motorcade there. They also had this car dealership that received $100,000 from an Iranian fugitive. All in all, pretty concerning stuff, and it's right in line with what Democrats are always talking about cybersecurity and foreign meddling and how that's the worst thing ever and you can't tolerate it, and it happens right inside their own house. But you don't hear them talking about it. You don't hear them expressing concern, and that's been the big question here is, on the surface, Democrats were the apparent victims of this guy, so why aren't they up in arms about it? Instead, you have them defending him, like those quotes from Debbie Wasserman Schultz that you played. So there's two parts here. There's the cyber breach, and then there's the procurement thing, which is basically they were buying all this expensive equipment, and they were falsifying the price that was listed. So it basically went into a slush fund where it wasn't tracked, and people were saying this equipment was disappearing. So the lawyers basically said for these guys, one of these quotes is, this is just how things have been done forever. This is what experienced members of Congress expect. To expedite things, they adjust the pricing. So adjust the pricing is another way of saying you know, you could say fraud, really, is what it looks like. Another one of their lawyers said, in a fluid situation, you do what you're ordered to do. So these guys are basically throwing members of Congress under the bus and saying the procurement thing was part of a systemic, long-running thing that House Democrats were doing, you know, using this taxpayer-funded money in ways that they're not supposed to. And it almost harkens back to, like, the House banking scandal back in the 1990s.
Do we know if they're able to put those hard drives back together and glean the information that was on there off them?
I don't know what was on those hard drives that were found in his house that were damaged, but basically they were in court on Friday, and prosecutors revealed some additional information, like you mentioned, including the alias in Queens. And the lawyer basically stood up and said, you know, we, quote, very strongly want to block you from reviewing the hard drive that was found in the laptop, so that, or in the backpack in that phone booth. So that appears to be referring to the same laptop.
Why would the lawyer for a Juan be fighting if it was Debbie Wasserman Schultz's laptop appropriately? In other words, wouldn't she have to fight for that?
That's a great point, and he's invoking attorney-client privilege, which is like, first of all, he hadn't even been arrested. This was months prior to him getting arrested, and he had put this note by the laptop that said attorney-client privilege. And now they're saying as long as his lawyers choose to invoke this privilege, they don't want prosecutors to look at that laptop. And that laptop, it does appear to be the same one that Wasserman Schultz was talking about in the clip you played. It does appear to be government property with her username on it. So there's a number of questions about why they would feel that they could somehow block this, and especially with it being government property, and also why. But these guys have not yet been charged with the invoicing scheme or the cyber breach. So, you know, you have to assume that the lawyers are aware that what they're charged with right now is just the tip of the iceberg, and they're trying to block prosecutors from getting the evidence they would need to bring additional charges related to stuff going on in the House.
So where's Debbie Wasserman Schultz in all of this? I mean, we heard the passion a plea in the attack against the police officer who had this initial laptop. He leaves it at a phone booth. You know, the fact that he called law enforcement to tell him it was there, that would seem like he wanted them to go through it. And then he's now claiming attorney-client privilege for something that apparently isn't even his. This doesn't make any sense to me.
It's very strange. I mean, he was late at night in the House office building, actually a different office building than the one he works in, and he left this laptop in there, and it had a copy of his ID, this laptop with username RepDWS, and then a letter to the prosecutors and a note that said attorney-client privilege. And he didn't call the police, but he left it there in a way that it seems like pretty unlikely that he would collect all this important evidence and then just walk away and leave it in a phone booth. It seems like something that he's smart enough not to forget. So people were kind of wondering, did he leave it there intentionally?
Wow. I mean, the whole thing is very, very odd. Isn't it? So do you think that this in any way, and do you have any indication through your digging into this case and your research into this case and your investigating into this case, do you think any of this could be connected to the idea that the DNC, remember she was fired on the eve of the DNC convention, that there's information that could implicate her in the sense that she was involved in being partnered with Hillary Clinton in her campaign as chairman of the DNC, chairwoman of the DNC, and that Bernie basically was axed out and had no mathematical chance to win? In other words, the fix was in from the get-go.
Well, what we know is that she didn't let the FBI analyze the DNC servers, and just 2 months later, the Capitol Police told her that her house aide was a suspect in these cybersecurity violations, and then she tried to block them from seeing the equipment associated with that case as well. So whatever's on that laptop, and you have to take Wasserman Schultz at her word, she claimed it was her laptop, a member's laptop. She really doesn't want that seen, even though on the surface here, what we have is a rogue staffer.
Is this the same laptop that the police had?
Yes.
Do we know if she wiped it clean in any way?
Well, the police have that laptop, but what they're trying to, so I guess they know what's on it, but what they're trying to do is block it from being used as evidence. So the two things that are going on here is, why are members not cooperating?
Why would they block it if they didn't think there was something on there that would implicate a Juan?
Right. Both Debbie Wasserman Schultz and Imran Awan have tried to block prosecutors from looking at this laptop.
This is getting more odd by the day, isn't it? I mean,
absolutely. And this is, you know, if this was a rogue staffer, you would expect these members to be condemning him and assisting with the prosecution. And especially now that he's basically throwing them under the bus, you still don't hear a peep out of these guys. So it really raises a question about, are they really concerned about cybersecurity? Because this had all the markings of something that should be taken as a serious potential cybersecurity breach, but you're just hearing crickets from them.
Isn't this an interesting case? I mean, wouldn't you think that on Debbie Wasserman Schultz, there had to be top secret information as well?
Well, a lot of people say, oh, there's no need to be concerned here because members of Congress don't have classified information, which is generally true, but you have the potential for blackmail, embarrassment, things like what came out in the DNC emails. So that could be one reason why members don't want this investigated, even though they're accused of harming members, of breaching their own servers. And then the other thing is the potential exposure of Democrats' involvement in a kickback scheme. So if this equipment was disappearing, then, you know, maybe members or a chief of staff was splitting the proceeds with these guys. And maybe that's why they had a McDonald's guy and other apparently no-show employees on the payroll, is that the members are paying out taxpayer money and receiving a portion back in cash. We've seen that with members in the past, like Corrine Brown, a former member, was convicted of very similar crimes just a couple months ago. So you, when the lawyers blame Congress for supposedly ordering these guys to do procurement falsification, you got to take it with a grain of salt, because it's coming from a defense attorney who has a, he's trying to get his guy off. But at the same time, you look at members of Congress, why would they not be concerned that their own staffer was wrongfully accessing their stuff? They should be mad. And it's not a partisan thing. The Democrats were the victims here on the surface. But where it gets weird is that they're not acting like victims.
All right. Thanks, Luke Groziak from the Daily Caller. You've been doing great work, and I know you're digging hard. I think this is going to blow probably sometime sooner than later, and you will be one of the few in the media that actually saw this for what it was early on. We give you a lot of credit for stepping out on this.
First of all, does anybody know the last time he's been to a football game? Okay, with that being said, he tweeted out a three-year-old photo of him at a Colts game. So with the information that I have, the last time he's been to a Colts game is 3 years ago. So this looks like a PR stunt to me. He knew our team has had the most players protest. He knew that we were probably going to do it again. And so this is what systemic oppression looks like. A man with power comes to the game, tweets a couple of things out, and leaves the game with an attempt to thwart our efforts. Again, based on the information I have, that's the assumption that I made. That we didn't have a plan gesture like we did last week. These were guys that felt compelled to continue to protest. I think it is gaining ground. I've spoken to y'all previously about controlling the narrative, and that's what we'll do. And if I need to say it every time y'all ask me, this is not about the military, this is not about the flag, this is not about that. My mother served in the armed forces. Three of my uncles served in the armed forces. In fact, my mom would have went to the Persian Gulf War had she not been pregnant with me. I have the utmost respect for the military, the anthem, and the flag. So I would say that every time y'all interview me. This is about systemic oppression that has been rampant in this country for decades, on top of decades. And I will continue to say and encourage people to educate themselves of how we got to where we are today, because it didn't happen overnight.
It's not a stunt if you're saying that you think it's appropriate that everybody honor the flag, the anthem, and respect those who served under that flag that fought, bled, and died. Why is that so complicated? All right, we got to take a break. We'll come back. 800-941 Sean Hannity tonight. Steve Bannon. Also, Steve Scalise, the guy that was shot, the Republican. And Laura Ingraham and Spencer Tillman versus Burgess Owen on this football issue. That's 9 Eastern, Hannity on Fox. Set your DVR. Quick break, right back. News Roundup, Information Overload next.
Stay right here for our final News Roundup and Information Overload.
The investigation into the tragedy in Las Vegas this week has sparked a larger debate in America between people who want common sense gun control and people who are wrong. This shouldn't be a partisan issue. The guy had 47 guns. No one should own 47 of anything. If you own 47 cats, you are not a responsible pet owner. You're a crazy cat lady. And unlike with guns, the government will actually come and take your cats away because everyone agrees that's insane. Also, this guy bought 33 of his guns in the past year, and that didn't set off any kind of alert. If I buy $100 worth of Chick-fil-A, I get a text message from my bank that says, did you just purchase $100 worth of Chick-fil-A? Please, Colin, tell us this is fraud. How is no one keeping track of how many guns people own? There is a real law in Texas that says it's illegal to own more than six and I get why. No one needs that many. If you have more than six it's a clear sign you are training for something awful.
I mean, why is it so hard to get gun control in this country? I mean, who are these delicate snowflakes that we can't just tell, no, you're not allowed to have 40 guns anymore, Earl. From now on, you can have one gun, max, and six bullets. If you can't hit what you're shooting with six bullets, then you don't need to be shooting at it. Learn karate or use your words. I'm sick of this narrative that Americans just love guns so much. It's not true. 78% of Americans don't even own a gun. And 3% of Americans own 50% of all the guns in the country. That's the problem, that whiny 3% that needs to feel secure all the time.
Mr. Michaels, great show today. I was watching the show. I was surprised you didn't do Harvey Weinstein.
It's a New York thing.
It's a New York thing? Have a good one. All right, Mr. Michael.
Like everybody probably in this room, we suffered a nightmare as a country. And, you know, I've seen the crimes, the hate crimes, and, you know, the prejudice against women and the progress that people made on climate control, all of that starting to be peeled away. The LGBT community, civil rights, schools, Second Amendment, assault rifles, it's all just going away. But as long as my friend is here with me and with the American people, then I don't think we're going to have to worry. We're going to have to fight, but at least we've got somebody who's an inspiration. Ladies and gentlemen, William Jefferson Clinton, President of the United States.
All right, 800-941-SEAN, if you want to be a part of the program. That was the Lion premiere. I guess Weinstein attacks Trump and introduces Bill Clinton. Unbelievable. Lorne Michaels. Well, it's a New York issue. Weinstein's from New York, and therefore we didn't do it on Saturday Night Live. Well, that's pretty interesting, because I guess that is the same thinking behind Colbert and Jimmy Kimmel and Jimmy Fallon and Seth Meyers that all avoided the topic. And we all know how conservatives are treated, Republicans are treated when they, quote, fall from grace and whatever the scandal happens to be. You remember back during the campaign, I went through all of the countries that practice Sharia that donated to Hillary Clinton. And it was to the tune of millions and millions and millions of dollars. And then I also did a lot of research to find out, well, did she go after and attack the treatment of women in Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and all these other countries, UAE, that donated to the Clinton Foundation? No. In many countries, women can't drive. They can't vote. Marital rape is not a crime. Women are told how to dress. They can't travel without a man's permission. Then you've got the treatment of gays and lesbians in some of these countries are slaughtered and thrown literally off the top of high buildings, or they're hung and they're murdered. Now, Hillary claimed to be the champion of women's rights and gay rights, and then, of course, religious freedom. Well, Christians and Jews are persecuted in many of these countries. You can't even build a temple or a church in any of them. Now you've got the case of Harvey Weinstein, 30 plus years. I mean, I happen to know one of the people involved in this, and I sent this person a note this weekend. But you know, and I know, if it was a conservative, a religious figure, a Republican, that the treatment would have been very different. So why the difference? Why is it that Lisa Bloom was working for Harvey Weinstein up until this weekend? That made no sense to me at all. And then you look at, you know, what's the double standard? Why is there a double standard? Now, Hillary Clinton once said every survivor of sexual assault deserves to be heard and believed and supported. Well, I have the list of donations to Hillary. You know, it's over $60,000 from Harvey Weinstein between the PACs and every other donation he gave. Let's see. It's like a who's who. The Democratic National Committee, tens of thousands of dollars. Democratic Senatorial Committee, tens of thousands of dollars. Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, thousands of dollars. Cory Booker, tens of thousands. Chuck Schumer, tens of thousands. Andrew Cuomo, tens of thousands. Elizabeth Warren, Kirsten Gillibrand, Al Franken, John Kerry, Pat Leahy, former Congressman Pat Pat Kennedy, and it goes on and on and on. It's like a who's who of Democrats. Oh, I wonder if it was a Republican, or if he donated to Republicans, what the media narrative would be today. Anyway, joining us now from The Hill is Joe Concha to discuss this and much more. How are you?
I don't think you have to wonder what the media narrative would be. We saw that movie, Sean, right, with Roger Ailes and with Bill O'Reilly. That's exactly what it would be. Did you know that we looked this up before? CNN did over 50 stories, more than 50 stories in April alone on O'Reilly. And how many advertisers do you think they're contacting now of Weinstein movies and products? Probably none. So that's how it works. It's all selective outrage. So whenever you see people up in their moral soapboxes, Sean, you know it's all BS because it all depends on the party of the person that's being accused. Now, you asked before, Lisa Bloom, why was she advising Weinstein? Well, follow the money. She wrote a book, and that book was being turned into a miniseries. And you'll never guess which production company is producing that movie.
Uh-huh.
Weinstein's. Yeah, so I mean, she's the biggest phony in this. I mean, I've never seen somebody who just completely did a 180 when she represented women against Ailes and O'Reilly and then was advising Weinstein on how to handle sexual harassment allegations against him. It's amazing. But the stupid award, Sean, I mean, the stupidest excuse I've ever heard. You played it before. You said it before. Lorne Michaels, because Weinstein's from New York, you're not doing any skits or jokes on him like Donald Trump is from New York?
Yeah, exactly. Queens? That's a perfect example. Oh,
was he drunk when he said that? Was he? I mean, seriously, I'm asking this question. You're an actual.
How would I know? I don't know Lorne Michaels.
Like that. What's that?
I don't know Lorne Michaels for a hole in the wall. Do you?
I know he's a great, great discoverer of talent, whether you're talking Belushi or Murray or Chevy Chase or Will Ferrell or anybody. But he needs to find a better PR person if that was his excuse, because I swear I've never heard a stupider excuse in my life, and that's saying something.
Yeah, well, I think, and that's the point, that there is this massive double standard. What did you think? Did you see this video this weekend of a coffee shop owner out in Seattle kicked out a bunch of Christian pro-life people and talked about wanting to blank Jesus in the... Well, let me play it for you so you have it. I mean,
I'm gay. Okay. You have to leave.
So are you denying a service?
I am, yeah.
So why aren't we allowed to stay? Because
this is offensive to me. I own the place.
Was it?
I have a right to be offended.
Yeah.
So I have a right to say.
Did anyone buy anything in the store?
I didn't.
No.
I haven't bought anything.
So where did that come from?
That came from outside the store.
Right.
Okay, well, there's a lot of us in the city. I didn't leave anything in your store.
So something you found on public property.
I saw
that.
Right. So
shut up. You just admitted to it being you.
Right.
Yeah.
So
shut up.
What about it offends you? Okay.
There's nothing else you can say.
So
this is you.
So we're not welcome here.
I do not want these people in this place.
So you're not willing to tolerate our presence?
Extremely offensive. Can you tolerate my presence?
We are.
Right. We're actually in your coffee shop.
Really? Well, hey, if I go get my boyfriend right now and f*** him in the ass right here, you're going to tolerate that?
That would be your choice.
Are you going to tolerate it?
It's your place.
Answer my question. No, you're going to sit right here and watch it.
Well, no, I mean, we don't want
to. Well, then I don't have to tolerate this.
Well, that's true. I mean, you
then leave all of you. Tell all your friends don't come here.
Okay.
Okay.
Just know that Christ can save you from that lifestyle.
So. Yeah, I like ass. I'm not going to be saved by anything. I Christ in that. Okay.
He's hot.
You wouldn't.
You would be burned.
Okay, great. It's not a joke. Good. I'm glad.
Well, Seattle has proved
don't
itself.
Let's go.
I haven't seen this covered that much. And this is the only thing. This is one person, and it's his shop, and I understand the whole argument. He does not represent any group of people. For anyone to suggest that would be totally, completely inaccurate and unfair. But, and this is where the but is, if it was somebody doing that on the other side, it would be everywhere, is my argument. Do you agree?
24/7, wall to wall. They need 25 hours in the 24K news cycle just to cover that. Two things on this. One, I always thought the coffee shops were kind of tranquil and like nice places to sit down. This guy's way too angry to be.
I'm not a big coffee shop guy. I never understood the appeal of let me go and sit down for a few hours and drink coffee and play on my computer for a couple hours. I don't live that kind of life. Do you?
I go to Dunkin', man. You get three nice bags of coffee for $20 in, and I just make it at home my own way. It seems kind of like a waste of time. Like
I just make my own coffee at home. You got a Keurig machine. Boom, pop. It's there in 25 seconds. It's fresh and it's hot and it's delicious.
It's tremendous. And then, by the way, doesn't his owner know, or I guess he knew that it was being recorded, but, you know, yeah, he can run his coffee shop however he wants, but if there was some media coverage on this, and there's very little outside of conservative publications, I don't know why this just has to have a label on it. I mean, this is a story. It's very compelling audio, if you want to call it that, of a guy denying service to people that came in peacefully. They weren't acting out in any capacity, and he allowed it to be recorded. So what you hope is that people in Seattle, and I know it's a liberal town, would say, I'm not going to go reward somebody like that who treats people that way based on their religion. You hope that would happen, but who knows, man? But you're right. Not a lot of coverage on this at all, Sean.
Let me go to the NFL for this weekend. Jameel Hill, the ESPN host who called President Trump a white supremacist, is now calling for a boycott of the NFL unless team owners permit players to protest during the national anthem. Then you've got a poll showing that football is no longer America's most popular sport. And maybe it's accurate, maybe it's inaccurate, but I would argue that people's patience now are running very thin on this and all of this stuff. And then you've got Mike Pence walked out of the game in Indianapolis this weekend between the 49ers when the 49ers players took a knee again. And he said, I'm not doing it. I will not dignify any event that disrespects our soldiers and our flag. And I think that's the feeling among the average American that's going into these games. Jerry Jones has weighed in. The owner of the Cowboys says he's had it. We're going to respect our flag. And the same thing has happened with the owner of the Miami Dolphins. He said the same thing. And the coach of the Miami Dolphins, the owner, Steve Ross, now wants players to stand for the anthem, and the coach is now making it a rule. It already was a rule from what I read in the NFL handbook.
Yeah, I mean, that poll you mentioned, it was by the Winston Group. That's not, you know, a poll that kind of comes off the top of your head as like one of the top polling firms. But, you know, let's say they're even off by a couple of points. It shows a 31-point drop in popularity for the NFL from August until now. And it was the most popular sport. Now it's third. And you got to think that these anthem protests certainly have something to do with that. And, you know, the whole thing with Pence and leaving and the media coverage around that was, well, yeah, you know, that's a stunt on Pence's part, even though the White House says that trip was on the books for a while. It wasn't just any game. Peyton Manning was being honored, and they're giving him a statue outside, and obviously Peyton's huge in Indiana, and obviously Pence was governor of Indiana. So the way I'm trying to unpack this, Sean, is that, wait a minute, you're saying that Vice President Pence leaving a game because players were kneeling during the national anthem is a stunt, but not standing during the national anthem isn't a stunt?
Yeah, really.
In other words, he was exercising his First Amendment right. He was protesting the protest. And instead, it's called systemic oppression, is what Eric Reed called it.
Right.
He's a safety for the Niners. What? Oppression? He's expressing himself just like you are, Eric. That's all.
Well, I think the American people are now saying they've had enough, and it's pretty expensive to go to a ball game. And I think they keep this up for the rest of the season. Nobody's going to be paying attention anymore. Anyway, stay right there. Joe Concha, he writes for The Hill, 800-941-SEAN. We got a great Hannity tonight, 9 Eastern on the Fox News Channel. Steve Scalise will be interviewed by us. He wants to talk about the Vegas shooting in light of him being shot in that baseball field. And as we continue, Joe Concha is with The Hill. So, you know, I've got this movie coming out, and I know that Harvey Weinstein's been one of the big, big Hollywood mega moguls over the years, et cetera. And it's interesting that I've talked to a lot of people. Everybody's known this is going on, and nobody's wanted to take on Harvey Weinstein because Harvey Weinstein can ruin your career. And even Ashley Judd, who I'm not a fan of, had made a similar comment. You know, one of the reasons, Joe, that I decided to become the executive producer. Number one, I love the story of Let There Be Light. It's uplifting. It doesn't impugn my values. You can take your whole family to the movie. It's got a meaningful message in the movie. It's got an emotional ebb and flow that I'm really proud of. And it's like, I'm just tired of what Hollywood makes. And it's so formulaic and so predictable that I'm just sick of it. So I found out there was a 2015 survey, 1,400 Oscar acceptance speeches by a website. They found Weinstein was thanked more frequently than God.
I think Meryl Streep actually said, I'd like to thank my agent and my God, Harvey Weinstein. You could go on and on about this guy, Sean. But look, you talk about the media coverage of Harvey Weinstein. You know, the New York Times had this story in 2004.
Yeah, they killed it.
Yeah, the reporter who wrote the story, she's now at another publication. She doesn't get to mind talking about this, but she said she went to Europe and went to two countries and talked to a lot of people, and she wanted to go ahead with the story, and they completely gutted it, put it in the culture section somewhere, and that was the end of it. So ironic that the New York Times actually wrote a story today. Jim Rutenberg, who's a media reporter like me, said that, yeah, the New York Times had media enablers, including the New York Times, apparently.
I know, right?
That's amazing.
All right, Joe Concha, appreciate you always being with us. 800-941-SHAWN. We'll hit the phones when we get back. Toll free, 800-941-SHAWN on this Monday. Hannity tonight. Steve Scalise, who was shot, wants to weigh in on Vegas. Steve Bannon on how weak Republicans will be targeted. Laura Ingraham tonight and much more. At 25 till the top of the hour, toll free. Telephone numbers 800-941-SHAWN. You want to join us? So the president, media loves when the president goes on a tweet storm. And it's always an epic tweet storm, meltdown on Twitter. It's not a meltdown. And the president talked about the vice president, and he said the trip was long planned. He's receiving praise after leaving the game because the players continue to show disrespect. How many 49ers took a knee against Indianapolis the other day, Jason? It was
More than most other teams. There were a lot. It looked like there was some.
It was almost the whole team, right? Nope. It was a lot of people.
There were a lot of them. There wasn't just two or three.
Well, I just have no interest. If I see that, I have no interest in watching the game at that point. That's my own personal prerogative. I'm not getting involved in any boycott. I'm not telling any advertiser to step out. Everybody gets to choose what they want to do, but I find it so offensive, I'm just tired of it, the whole thing. And I think for other people like me, they just would rather not watch the game at that point. And it's frustrating. I mean, in light, you watch John Rich singing, Big and Rich singing God Bless America an hour before the shooting in Vegas, and it's so inspiring. Anyway, and everyone's like, oh, why would the president? He can't lose more than three senators. Why does he have to kiss Bob Corker's ass? Why? He doesn't. What has Bob Corker done except give us that idiotic Iranian deal? So I'm sorry. It's not important. Yeah, I want the agenda done. But at what point do you sell your soul to a bunch of people? Where's Corker's responsibility to do the things that he promised to do, except, oh, the president hurt my feelings, so therefore, oh, I can't go along with the president's plan. Oh, I'm going to be the deal breaker. Which, by the way, seems a lot like what John McCain is doing and has been doing. And if that's what John McCain, first thing he does is, you know, these guys can go straight to hell in talk
Stop
radio.
Stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on the radio and television and the internet. To hell with them.
Now, hell with us. Go to hell.
They don't want anything done for the public good.
Yes, we do.
Our incapacity is their livelihood.
Your incapacity is your failure. It's not our livelihood. I want things done. That's why long before the 2014 election, in December of 2013, I put out the Conservative Solution Caucus. You know, it's so pathetic that Republicans don't have any well-thought-out ideas and agenda items that I'm saying, wow, that's really inspiring. You know, we're spending the time putting on the Josh Umbers of the world and talking about health savings accounts and trying to come up with ideas that'll make things better. And to the president's credit, the president just decided, all right, well, I can't do health care on your own. What could I do on my own? And so the president worked with Rand Paul. Rand Paul's been on this program, you know, pushing this now for a long time. Stymied by Republicans that can't keep a promise, he's going to do what he always seems to do. He's finding a way to thread the needle on his own, and he is now poised to issue this order that will ease the federal rules governing health insurance and make it easier for we, the people, to band together and buy coverage on our own. Well, that's very similar to what I've been advocating with Dr. Josh Umber. You know, you get health care cooperatives, or what they call $50 a month, unlimited care. And then you get a catastrophic plan that'll no longer be illegal. You've got all the insurance you need. We don't need it. Now, yeah, Obamacare is the law of the land when we get a new Health and Human Services secretary. Okay. Now, the reason that the president is allowed to do this is, and Rand Paul's been urging this here on this program, and I told him I agreed with it, love the idea, think it's a good idea. Anyway, they're using the Employee Retirement Income Security Act. to evade Obamacare regulatory requirements. Now, if widely authorized, this would bury Obamacare with greater choice and competition in health insurance markets, and the Trump administration will need to, you know, the health care, this was first passed in 1974. It enables large corporations or entities to establish a single health plan or set of plans for all employees rather than having to comply with the rules and regulations of every state in which they operate. Now, to get this preemption of state law for these compliant plans, Congress added exemptions to many Obamacare regulations, and the plans thus benefit from the absence of many of the onerous state and federal mandates. You know, for example, in a blue state like New York or California or Illinois, every conceivable interest group is, you know, tangential to the health care issue, lobby their legislature to require their inclusion on the list of minimum coverage. And if you're not interested in chiropractic or mental or prenatal care, too bad, you're stuck paying for it. So that means if you're young and healthy and you only want catastrophic coverage, which is illegal under Obamacare, well, now you'd be able to buy it. So anyway, the mother of all mandates in Obamacare, the guaranteed issue, where one can forego insurance until getting sick and the insurance company must accept you, you know, et cetera, et cetera. That'll be gone, too. This may end up being better in the end. You know, but people like Bob Corker couldn't get their job done. And John McCain couldn't get it done. All right, let's go to Chris is in Irvine out in California. What's up, Chris? How are you? Glad you called, sir.
Hey, Sean. How you doing?
I'm good. What's happening?
Nothing too much, man. First of all, love your show. Love all the work you're doing with Kaya Jones and Enjoy Via. It's great. Out here in California, it's been a very interesting weekend. We had three sets of legislation signed into law, one of them making us obviously a sanctuary state, the other one basically minimizing some sex offenders from having to register for lifetime, and the last one to take the cake was reducing it from being a felony to a misdemeanor to knowingly transmit HIV to someone. So it's been a great great weekend for us Californians.
Yeah, but good nonetheless, luck. How much do you pay in state income tax? 13.5% and going higher.
Exactly. And all we're doing is being disarmed and making it more dangerous to live here. So, yeah, it's been but, you know, I've been watching the news over the weekend with the Harvey Weinstein, the Mike Pence thing, and it's just the implicit double standard going on. What do you feel about that?
Listen, I to me, it's obvious. I mean, Mike Pence just took a stand. There's only so much. I think there's only so much the American people are going to take from the NFL at this point, because the feeling
I would agree,
because there's too many people that fought, bled and died fighting under that flag. And there's certainly plenty of room in this country for political dissent. And they're certainly free to do it in the NFL, I guess, as long as Roger Goodell allows them to do it. But I think Jerry Jones has the right take on this, as does the Miami owner. I forget his name, but the Miami coach has now made it mandatory that they stand Stephen Ross, the owner of the Dolphins. And I think they're seeing the handwriting's on the wall. You keep this up and people are going to flock away. You're going to allow the players to do well, the same players that can't shoot a fake bow and arrow in the end zone or taunt other players, or they can't put never forget on their cleats on 9/11 2001 on the 15th anniversary of 9/11. I think, you know, either they're going to enforce the rules or they're going to let this continue to spiral down out of control. And it'll be the Kaepernicking of the NFL, and people are just not going to watch. I'm telling you, I'm not calling for a boycott, wouldn't call for a boycott. I don't do boycotts. Personally, I'm not as interested right now. I don't care. And I'm not, you want to do it on your own time is my attitude. I really prefer what I saw at that concert out in Vegas just before that shooting. That type of unity inspired me. Anyway, back to our busy phones. Ann is in Maryland. Ann, hi, how are you? And you are on the Sean Hannity Show.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to say the NFL, it amazes me how ignorant the players are for standing up for things they don't even know what they're standing up for. They act as pawns at their own peril. And it just astounds me that they can go out and do this and not understand how the public at large feels about it.
You know, the thing is, I don't think they care. And I don't think the owners and the coaches want to offend anybody. And therefore, even though it's in the rules, even though all other sorts of restriction of free speech are enforced in the NFL, they're just afraid if they say it, they might be accused of racism or something. And they just don't have the strength to stand up and say, you know what? These are our customers and our customers are screaming at us to stop. And now it's the least popular sport, according to the polls, in the country. Now, you know, one of the things that I've done in the course of my career is I read research. I know it may sound crazy to people, but there are people that actually research shows, television and radio. And sometimes when I'm reading the verbatim comments, and I will tell you this, people are very honest. And if I'm doing something wrong and they pick it up, it becomes obvious because there's not one person that says it. There's 15 that say it. And if I don't listen to that positive feedback, even though it may sting a little bit, as Ben Franklin once said, the sting in any rebuke is probably the truth. But I've listened to my audience and what they like, and I try to serve my audience with the best show possible. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. It certainly does. And we have to, I wish they were just more self-aware. I think there's a real problem with their self-awareness. And, you know, they're not realizing they're representing an entire country when they behave badly like that.
Look, I never expect athletes to be the role models so often. You know, you're putting a lot of pressure on young men that are 22 that have been idolized on college campuses and had their hand held for the last 4 years and treated with kid gloves oftentimes, although they work really hard as student athletes. And then they come into all this money and, you know, they think this is going to go on forever. And I think fame naturally is not a healthy thing for any young person, especially. And so I'm not expecting perfect role models, but this is the country that is allowing them to play the sport they love and have a blast and make a lot of money doing it. And I just think that there is a lack of understanding about who pays those tickets. You know, if the average median income in this country is $40,000-$50,000 a year, and a family of four, average ticket is $100. That's $400. You got a wife and two kids. And then you buy the kids two jerseys. Now we're up to 600. And then you buy a couple of beers and hot dogs and some popcorn and you walk out of there. You're down $800. That's a big deal for people. And I think those people whose fathers and maybe themselves fought in battle and wars, or they know family members that have and friends that have, and they know how many people died fighting under that flag, they find it disrespectful. And they're saying it loudly. And they don't like it. And I think there's a place, you know, I love what Robert Kraft did of the Patriots. He said to his team, I'll match you dollar for dollar. Let's go make our community a better place. It was brilliant because now you're solving problems and you're doing it in a way that's constructive. Back to our phones we go as we say hi to Ken is in California. Ken, hi. How are you? Glad you called.
Thank you for taking my call, Sean. And I also want to thank you for your opens from Las Vegas last week.
Thank you.
I'm a combination firefighter and police officer on a disability retirement. And I wanted to talk about two things that I think you've missed that are pretty important. One is the prodigious amount of violence that is committed against the police officers every year. And I'm going to tie this into Colin Kaepernick and the NFL in a second. If you look at the FBI statistics for the past 12 years, a police officer has been assaulted somewhere in the United States on average every 9 minutes and has been killed or injured in the line of duty every 30 minutes. They're attacked by a suspect with a gun about every 4 hours, with a knife an additional 3 times a day, and every 75 minutes with a dangerous weapon as defined by the FBI. And the rest are hands and feet, and people are killed by hands and feet more often than rifles and shotguns combined each and every year. So to put this in perspective, in less than 2% of the time that an officer is assaulted is a suspect killed, and in less than 6% of the time that an officer is killed or injured in the line of duty is a suspect killed, and in slightly more than 1/100 of 1% of a time that an African-American is arrested is one killed. So Colin Kaepernick and why the NFL is wrong on this is that the NFL didn't allow any of the honoring of the Dallas officers who were killed on the line of duty. But Colin Kaepernick, as a 49er, an employee of the NFL, embraced numerous cop killers on all of his social media sites. He continues to do that, and that's the part I think you missed. It's not.
Well, let me say this. He gave $25,000 to a charitable group that honored a convicted cop killer. And his foundation made the donation to a Chicago-based Asada's daughter's name after the Black Liberation Army member, Asada Shakur, in April as part of $1 million charitable fund. And Shakur was convicted of first-degree murder in the 73 shooting death of a New Jersey state trooper. So I think that's what you're referring to. And let me tell you something. It does represent. He has cops depicted as pigs on his socks. I'm sorry. If you're going to Kaepernick the NFL, I'm telling you, they're going down the wrong path. I am losing interest every week. We're now headed into week 6. I don't care. I'm watching baseball. I'm watching other sports. I'm working harder.
I agree with you on that.
Yeah, I got to roll. Yeah. Good information, though. I appreciate it. 800-941-SHAWN if you want to be a part of the program. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue. It's the Sean Hannity Show. All right, that's going to wrap things up for today. An awesome Hannity monologue on left-wing hypocrisy that you won't hear anywhere else because liberals don't want to admit that they're phony hypocrites and their outrage is selective moral outrage, not real outrage. Also tonight, Steve Scalise is going to join us. His first cable interview, we're excited to have him. Also, Laura Ingraham, we'll talk to her, and Spencer Tillman versus Burgess Owen on kneeling in the NFL. 9 Eastern, set your DVR. Hannity on Fox. Thanks for being with us. See you tonight at 9, back here tomorrow.